I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. Now, I could continue saying this, and it's a wonderful affirmation, and it would be as effective as any talk I could give. But I will say a few words too. I live in my eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body. This is the most perfect prayer you could ever give for your being. Now, you think, because it says body as the end of the phrase, that's the one you remember most. I live in my eternally perfect body, mind, and spirit. And then you think of your spirit. I live in my eternally perfect body, spirit, and mind. And then your mind is the last thing in your mind. And so you think that that's what the prayer is for. But the prayer, the statement, the affirmation is for all three. You live in your eternally perfect. Anyone have a comment to make at this point?
Ideal.
Spirit, mind, and body. Now, why do we add the word ideal in there? We add the word ideal because our eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body could be a quadriplegic body. It could be a mentally unbalanced body. It could be anything that you choose to experience on this plane of reference. On another dimension, you might be experiencing a totally different series of activities with your expression of yourself, which may be just like this or maybe quite different. Now, I live in my eternally perfect, ideal spirit, mind, and body. That means you're... Any comment?
That means your
original purity and integrity. That means ideal is your original purity and integrity. The original concept of what and who you are. Now, it does not have to be a physical form. It does not have to be a mental or a spiritual form. But what it is the original concept. Now, if I say to you, please tell me the original concept of a light bulb. Well, let's make it even simpler. Please tell me the original concept of light. Now, you might say, well, the light of the moon or the stars or the sun. The light of a celestial body, that's light, that brings light. Or you might say, the light in your eyes, as a lover might say to his or her beloved, the light in your eyes. You might say, the light coming from the fire. You hold a stick of fire, it's burning, and it gives light. And you can walk into your cave and check your cave out before you lie down so you don't lay down some big polar bear or some big brown bear or something, you know, who's hibernating. The light could be a light that you have in your kitchen, and it is a bulb, an incandescent bulb, or a fluorescent bulb, or a halogen bulb, or any of the new types of lighting that are coming out, beautiful and significant and powerful. It could be the light in a football stadium, a soccer stadium. It lights the whole soccer stadium, and it's just like daylight because there's lights on all sides. And the number of watts is fantastic. Beautiful light. But you see, when we think of light, what concept are you thinking of? You have an infinite variety of concepts to think of when you think of light. So if I say to you, let there be light, and Ellen is working the switch, so she turns the rheostat, and the light goes up and up and up and up and up and up, and the room is illumined. And then we have a light in there that is, wow, maybe 40,000 watts. That's a lot. And Ellen keeps turning it up and up and up and up, and Sylvia's sitting there looking at Ellen saying, Ellen, That's fine. And Ellen says, nope, I can still see you. Mm-hmm. And so she turns the light up and up, and pretty soon Sylvia disappears. Mm-hmm. And Ellen disappears because the light is so great that you only see the light. Mm-hmm. Now, are the people still there?
Yes.
But you only see the light. Now, that too is light. Now, that light transcends the human. It transcends the physical. You say, well, that's just a number of watts and volts. No. Light per se is what all life is about. We are all light. We are all beings of light. And when we slow our light down, when we reduce the power of our light, and we become human beings, or we reduce the power of our light and we become stones, truly, the more, the slower the vibrations go, the more dense is the object. And a stone is more dense than a human being. Although our bones are supposed to be dense, but even our bones are hollow, remember? And if you take a person after they have passed away, after they're no longer using their body, and put it in a crematorium, even the bones are all burned into little tiny nubbins, and they would be burned even more if the volume of the fire, that not the volume, but if the intensity of the fire were increased, the bones would become powder, and then they would no longer become powder, they'd become the essence of the universe. But that wasn't necessary for the crematorium, because they figured that's far enough, and then people can just splash that over the earth and say, from dust to dust. But what are we, really? What is our archetypal self? What is our original purity and integrity? Well, when you find that out, write a book. You could be very successful. But that really is not terribly important. What is terribly important is that it is a fact. You say that the light, the more bright the light shines, the less you can see of the physical universe, because the physical universe melts or is reduced in that light. Now, think of this once. If you lived in that light, could you bump into another person? Could you touch another person? Could you touch an object? No. We are not brilliant enough to fully understand that, but that's what happens. When you are nothing, you are the allness, you are the people say, oh, to be the allness, to be the infinite, to be the is so great a concept, so great an essence, so great an idea. Hey, it's nothing more than a very, very bright light, which makes you one with all. You are no longer unique individuals standing around. You are no longer a stone, a house, a car. You are one, and it's to be one is no more than the concept of light that is so bright that you cannot see anything else. Of course, there are a few other steps involved, but that's not the point. The point is, it's something for us to think about. Okay, so now, every morning as I walk the path, I say, I am the pure white light of love. Not bad. Not bad. I surround myself with my pure white light of love. And then I begin to surround everyone else. I surround God Unlimited, University of Healing, Absolute Monastery, School of the Master, monks, staff, students, and friends. I surround my family. I surround all the circumstances. I surround the pets, especially. I surround the pets with my pure white light of love. All their ways are peace, and all their paths are pleasantness. They live in their eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body. Fuck! I'm not concerned about them being independently wealthy. I figure that's our responsibility. We have chosen to be their master. And truly, well, now that we're mentioning it, if you're the master of your dog, you are the master of your silverware. You are the master of your placemats. You are the master of your glassware that you use for eating. You are the master of your carpet on which you stand. You are the master of anything that you behold. I am the master of all I behold. In the early pioneer days, it was not uncommon for a person to go west in the United States. And in the west were vast expanses of plains and meadows and forests and everything. And for that person, who was the first person to be there, I am master of all I survey. He forgot the Indians live there too, but I am master of all I survey. And so he took it over. And he is a land baron, a land king, a land baron. It's a man who owns a lot of land. And so he says, this is my domain. And he looked out upon the hills and the valleys and the forests and the rivers and all the neat stuff. And he says, this is mine. This is mine. When France came to the United States, they looked up and down the Mississippi River, and they had missionaries go up and down and so forth and claim land for the king of Spain. And then the king of Spain wasn't doing so good, so the king of France sent his people down the river, and then they took it over. And they said, we own everything that we survey. And that's why New Orleans became French. And Florida was Spanish, and Southern California was Spanish. In fact, the Mexicans lived throughout all of California, basically. One of the capitals of one of the Mexican states or territories, whatever they called it, was Monterrey. You know, quite a ways north. Mm-hmm. And So the United States just moved across the country and just took it over. And of course, there were people in the Mexican community who didn't appreciate that, and there were wars. But the United States, naturally, by their aggressiveness and forcefulness and experience, were able to take it over themselves. Now, too bad they didn't take over all of Mexico, mm-hmm. and Mexico wouldn't be a state of poverty today, it'd be a state of abundance. Mm-hmm. Wow. But, so be it. And that's our neighbor. Now, the land barons looked out upon everything they surveyed and said, this is mine. It's just like you, standing in a brilliant light, and you turn the light more and more brilliant, and your eyes do not have the capacity to see in that brilliant light, because all you can see is light. And so, as far as you're concerned, there's nothing. You've heard of snow blindness? Well, snow blindness is the whiteness of the snow that becomes so brilliant and so penetrating that you cannot see. And in fact, you are blind for a period of time. You cannot see because your eyes acclimated to that brightness of the snow, and they had to reacclimate to the normalcy of not brightness. Back to human stuff. Actually, the people who are snowblind are experiencing quite an amazing adventure. But they fear it because, I can't see, you know. And of course, you turn the light up so bright, you can't see. But that's like our original purity and integrity. It is so beautiful. It is so complete. It's so perfect. You can't see it. But it's there. It's very much there. And so, as we say, I am the pure white light of love. I live in my eternally perfect, ideal spirit, mind, and body. We are saying that we are living in our archetypal body. We are saying we live in our original purity and integrity. We are saying we are whole and perfect. We are whole and perfect. We are whole and perfect. Now, why do we ever feel that we're not whole and perfect? Because we feel a pain. And we say, oh my God, I got a pain. I wonder what it can be. You go to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, it's terrible. You're going to die. And you say, oh, doctor, thank you for telling me. I can get my house in order now. And you just accept the doctor's opinion. But you don't have to. You can go to 5 doctors, and you're liable to get 5 different opinions. Maybe not that many. A couple might agree, but you get different opinions. Well, now, why would different doctors give you different opinions? Because different doctors are working from different frames of reference. Now, if you want to work from the frame of reference of the doctor who says, hey, you're okay, just take a little better care of yourself, you know, and that condition will just go right away, you know, that's no big deal. But the other doctors say, oh, we got to operate. Money, 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 money. We got to do this. And I don't mean the doctors are bad because they got to operate. Because if they can get you to believe that, then you better have the operation. Because if they can get you to believe that you need an operation to take care of a condition, well, then that's necessary. But if you, in your consciousness, can be so pure by affirming the truth about yourself and living the truth about yourself and believing the truth about yourself, then that is who you are. And strangely enough, instant remission. You know what remission is? What's remission, anybody?
That's the going back, the return of the regression.
Yeah, regression. It returned. Yeah, it is no more. It's gone. What was there is no longer there. Look, you got a cold, 7 days, and you say, poof, nonsense, I don't have a cold. But you did a second ago, I chose not to. Well, aren't you good? You know, well, why did you do it in the first place? Hey, I don't argue about that point. That was stupid, but I'm not doing it in the second place. Mm-hmm. I speak in my word, I am free and clear. I have no cold. You don't say I have no cold. What are you saying?
I'm old and perfect.
I'm old and perfect. That's what you say. You do not exacerbate any condition by giving it a vocal definition, by talking about it. You don't do that. Because if you do that, what do?
Power.
You empower it. And do you want to empower it?
No.
I should think not. Don't empower it. Don't say that it exists. Don't even recognize it. If you're not strong enough to handle the cold, then you better get yourself a steamer. Like Siegfried, and put your head over it and say, oh, I feel so terrible. If Siegfried had said, I'm whole and perfect, and stood up and had no steamer, had none of these things, I'm perfect, I'm fantastic, I know, hey, he's a veterinarian, a doctor, you know, he didn't need to do that, but he played the game. He wanted
attention.
People to feel sorry for him. He wanted attention. He wanted attention, and he always wants attention. You could see that by the way he bombastically goes around doing his thing. One minute he says one thing, and the next minute he says something different, and you never can know what you're supposed to do. But what was the fact about that? One minute he said one thing, and one minute he said something else. When he said something, you obey that. When he says, no, I didn't say that, this is what I say, then you obey that. You don't dwell upon the fact that he is rather irascible. That means one minute he says one thing and one minute he says another. You just dwell upon, hey, he's the boss. He can change his mind as often as he wants and as quickly as he wants, seconds apart, if so be it. And that I'm untouched by it. Now, that's amazing, isn't it? Now, you notice his young brother wasn't touched, was he? He told his young brother, get out of here, I don't ever want to see you again. And his young brother said, James, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Tomorrow he'll have a different opinion, you know. Or maybe even this afternoon, maybe even at supper time. At supper time he's like, didn't I tell you to go? Didn't I tell you I don't want them to go in this house? And he didn't say that. Because he gets his vituperation out at the moment he gets it out. And then 10 minutes later, he's forgotten it. Which is wonderful, but very unstable, very unstable. And that's how we are in effect. We are very unstable. Because one minute we say we're whole and perfect, and the next minute we say we're sick. One minute we say we're wonderful, the next minute we say we're not. One minute we say we're poor, one minute we say we're rich. You know, can't you make up your mind, huh? You got a problem? Can't make up your mind? One minute you say this, what's your name, Siegfried? Are you some sort of a silly old cow? My goodness sakes, get with it. Whatever word you put in motion is your reality. I'm whole and perfect. I live in my ideally perfect spirit, mind, and body. I live in my eternally perfect ideal spirit, mind, and body. Say it any way you like, but say it, affirm it. Know it. I'm whole and perfect, and I go around saying that I'm whole and perfect. I don't need to go around saying I'm whole and perfect because I'm whole and perfect. But I say it because it does not hurt to reaffirm the truth whenever you think about it. It does not hurt to reaffirm the reality of your being every time you think about it. This is what we're all about. This is what life's all about. Life is all about who can shout the loudest. You're in a soccer stadium. You guys know soccer better than football. So you're in a soccer stadium. And the other team says, "Bah, bah, you're a dumb team, you're a bad team, you're a dumb team, you're a bad team." If the other team listens to that and falls under the sway of those words, they're dead. But the coach says, "Come on, guys, you know what they're doing. You know they're just trying to get your goat and put you down." But the coach also has a cheering section. The coach has what he calls the girls who dance and you know, the cheerleaders. Cheerleaders. The cheerleaders. Yeah, that's what they are. They're the cheerleaders. And the coach says, "Come on, we need a little spunk around here. Cheer them up, cheer them up." And so the cheerleaders go out and they stand in front of the part of the stadium that belongs to this team, and they say, "You, rah, 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 go team, go team. You're winners, 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 you're winners." And with that vibration, all that nonsense goes away and is forgotten. And the, "You're winners, you're winners." And the guys get out there and they win. Now, isn't that nothing but an affirmation? Isn't that nothing but a statement of truth? Isn't that something we can do? Sylvia, where are your cheerleaders?
I am my cheerleader.
There you go. And remember that. Yes. You are always your cheerleader. What about you, Ingeborg?
I am my own.
Yeah, Heinz?
Yes, I'm the cheerleader for myself.
I am my cheerleader.
I am my cheerleader.
I am my
kid. Oh, Ellen, I forgot about you. Oh, my gosh, I didn't even recognize that you were here. I thought perhaps we were just all alone without you.
I love the light.
Dim the lights, we can see you. But no, you're bright, too. Okay. Are you your own cheerleader?
I am my own cheerleader.
Okay. Now, let us go into life from this moment forward as our own cheerleaders, cheering ourselves on into who we are. Now, the team's a winner or a loser, depending upon their attitude. And if they're a winner, wow, they do wonderful things. If they're a loser, poof, they play a good game, but I knew we were going to lose. I mean, the other team just was too good. Yeah. They were not too good. They believed in themselves. That's what they were. It's not a matter of being good or bad. It's just believing in yourself. When you believe in yourself, then you make all the right moves. Not because you're better than somebody else, but you make all the right moves because you believe in yourself. And the difference between a winning team and a losing team is a team that believes in itself. That's all. When the coach can give them a pep talk before the meeting, before the game, and then they go in there and, "You, rah, 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 go team, go team, go team." And then, you know, they try to put you down. They love to put you down. They think that's what they should do. They should put you down and put their team up. "Our team's the greatest. Our team's the greatest." Have you ever noticed, by and large, teams that wear black don't win too much. They're average. Teams that wear white seem to always win. Now, you don't want to wear white while you're on the team because you get dirty so quick. But that's what the locker room is for. You go halftime in the locker room, everybody changes their clothes and gets on fresh clothes again. We're winning, you know, and they don't really care. The laundry takes care of it. But the black teams, they don't have to go in the locker room because you can't see the dirt on their black uniforms, or the brown, or the green, or the blue. But the white, always remember, the white are the winners. In the Old West, the Lone Ranger on his white horse, Silver, wearing his white pants and his white jacket and his white shirt and his white hat with his faithful sidekick, Tonto. And you never see the Lone Ranger kissing anybody. You never see the Lone Ranger having a love affair. And the Lone Ranger is always on the side of justice and on the side of right. The Lone Ranger is not a homosexual. He doesn't live with his friend Tonto as a love partner. They're just teammates. They're working together. No one ever thought the Lone Ranger had anything improper about the way he did things. And that's because the Lone Ranger always wore white, and he always gave a silver bullet to whoever it was that he protected. Now, what are you giving to yourself when you wear your white, when you are doing right, when you are following justice, peace, honor, and goodness? You give whatever you are. You give whatever you are. You see, we like to flaunt our life. We like to flaunt our sexuality. We like to flaunt our handsomeness. We like to flaunt our wealth. We like to flaunt our health. We like to flaunt these things. And to flaunt means to show them out in a way that makes us better than somebody else. But when we just live as wealthy beings, as healthy beings, as harmonious beings, as joyous beings, as normal beings in every way, and I'm not saying with the word normal that it must be what society says is normal, but if you want to live in society, then you must live as a normal being, or else you are not accepted, and society says, boo, you know. And if you want society to say that about you, then go ahead and live as an abnormal being. But society would never know that you were an abnormal being if you weren't flaunting it. Mm-hmm. If you were just living as a master, doing your own thing, society wouldn't even notice you. If you were doing things that might be strange for society, society wouldn't even notice it. If you were living it, not to flaunt it, just to be yourself and have fun. So don't think that just because your method of medicine, the alternative method using holistic practices, is different from what society uses, that it's bad. Don't even say it. I was on a fast, and I was driving back and forth to work every day, and I was losing a little weight, and I was very happy about what was happening. And my colleagues at the United Church of Religious Science, we'd have meals together, and I'd have my water. And they'd say, Herb, why aren't you eating? Herb, you're getting thin. Herb, you should be eating. And I said, gentlemen, my doctor recommends the fast for me. Oh, okay. After that, no problemo. You know, everything was fine. Who is my doctor? Me. Me. Now, I go to my doctor here, who gives me my annual and that sort of stuff, and I say to him, I'm going to go on this fast. Well, that's good. And I'm just drinking lemonade, maple syrup, and cayenne pepper, and a gallon of water. He says, hey, that's good. He says, that's fine. He said, you should get your weight down a little bit. And so I'd go into the office, and usually I'd be up a pound. And the nurse would say, my, you have gained a little. And so now, when I go back into the office sometime, they'll say, my, you have lost a little. And I will say, no, I am just always my perfect weight of 175 pounds that it says on my driver's license. Actually, I was 234. But the thing is, I'm 175, and that's my image of myself. And that's what I will express, because that's what I do express. That is my archetypal self, as far as I'm concerned. And so that's what I will be and live. Now, what about you? Are you going to hand out silver bullets as you go around doing your wonderful work? Are you going to wear a white hat, white jacket, white shirt, white pants, or white dress, you know, white shoes? Are you going to, or are those things really of no great account? What is the great account of what's inside you? Are you going to live your spirituality so beautifully that no one notices it? They merely look at you and say, you're a very special person. Like the lady came over to Stefan and said, there's something about you. And of course, there's a lot about Stefan. But she says, there's something about you. And she's right. He is a very spiritually oriented person. And he's having a lot of fun. You haven't met him yet, have you?
No.
Yeah, you have that privilege. But we have a lot of beautiful people in our world. Stefan's been with us since, what is it, 63, when he attended seminar over in Badragatz and so forth. Remember that? Oh, you weren't there at that one. That was before you started with us. But we had a lot of fun. Heinz, when did you start? 83. Did I say 63?
Yes.
Oh, pardon me.
That's
when
he was born.
Yeah, 83. Well, I was with him when he was born. So 83. Yeah, you're right, Heinz. You're right. Years all moved. I would have said 38. But Ellen was born 39. So that would be, that'd be interesting too. But here we are. Rock, 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 go team, go team, rock, 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 go team, go team. Be your own cheerleader. And you're whole and perfect. I live in my eternally perfect ideal, spirit, mind, and body. Make these statements, live these statements, yes, express these statements, and be fantastic, because you are your own cheerleader.
Right.
And that's all I have to say on the matter at the moment. I love you, I love you, I love you.
Thank you.